Welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast, your weekly insight into the world of Formula One.
Hello and welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast for our Imola race review. I'm joined by the editor-in-chief of Grand Prix 24/7, Paul Velasco, to discuss what I thought was an entertaining race overall. Paul, how did you enjoy your Sunday afternoon Formula One?
I love every Grand Prix I've watched. I moan sometimes because they're pretty boring. This one was quite intriguing, and we'll discuss it later, of course, but the first thing you have to say is hats off to Mercedes, seven-time world champions, the greatest team ever assembled. You know, and I say this with respect to the Schumacher team assembled by Jean Todt and the boys, and also Ron Dennis's mighty McLaren. But this is Toto Wolff's taking it to the next level. It's a perfect team. I don't think any driver would not want to drive for this team. And it can be argued that most top 10 drivers on the grid, had they been with Mercedes, they'd probably be win races also. That they would be as good as Lewis Hamilton is, I doubt. But it's a very, very strong car, and they've delivered a strong car for 7 years in a row, and that's pretty awesome. You know, just I stand up and bow my hat, do everything with total respect for what they have achieved. They are the mightiest team I've ever seen in Formula One.
Yeah, I mean, the records speak for themselves, really, and I think the fascinating thing was, you know, coming into Formula One in 2010 after taking over from Brawn, and the success wasn't immediate. You had some years with Schumacher and Nico Rosberg where they found things difficult, and Red Bull was going through a period of dominance. McLaren and Ferrari were still relatively strong, and you know, until we had the change to the turbo hybrids in 2014, they weren't successful. But once this engine formula came in, they've just been unbeatable, really. I think also something they deserve a huge amount of credit for was, you know, as the engines became less dominant towards kind of 2017 and 18, they've shown that they have the kind of aerodynamics expertise as well to dominate when in a formula where the engines aren't such a big factor. Of course, they continue to have an incredibly reliable engine that very rarely gives their drivers problems. But yeah, I think I probably have to agree with you. No team has ever had seven consecutive constructors' titles. Ferrari in the Schumacher, Jean Todt, Ross Brawn era held the record previously with six. And yeah, you know, a remarkable achievement from a team that has dominated Formula One now for a number of years. And you know, often some people say to the detriment of the entertainment and the racing. But you know, Mercedes can only beat what's put in front of them, and I think that you can't deny that they've done a fantastic job at that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's absolutely, you know, they built a fantastic team. Of course, they hit the ground running in the hybrid era, and that's a whole nother story. But let's forget about those are the rules. Everyone played by it. Ferrari messed up badly. Renault have always been playing catch-up. Honda have poured huge money and they're still playing catch-up. So yeah, Mercedes, and as you say, it's a whole package because they've built a dream team. Toto has built a dream team. It is the dream team. It's Formula One's dream team. And you can't say it enough because honestly, it also makes dreams. You know, Lewis Hamilton has become what he's become on the back of this amazing team. And, you know, and everyone involved deserves the plaudits. And, you know, if I put my fan hat on, I'd say, oh, they should have replaced Bottas with Max or replaced Bottas with, you know, Russell or whatever. Yes, maybe, you know, as a fan. But as a brutal winning machine, having Lewis as the number one who always delivers and having Valtteri pushing him and making him raise it all the time, it's the ideal combination. You know, whether Valtteri wants to go down in history as the best wingman ever or not, he is. And he what he should embrace is he's part of this incredible racing team.
Unfortunately for Bottas, he is going to be remembered as a number two driver and someone who was an able support guy for Lewis Hamilton, who kind of become the just colossus in Formula One that he is and the dominant force. But yeah, I think, as you said, the making dreams point is really pertinent, I think, because, you know, they took this guy in Hamilton who was clearly talented and had a pretty damn good record at McLaren and just turned him into a complete winning machine, much in the same way that, you know, Schumacher, well, arrived at Ferrari in 1996 off his titles with Benetton and kind of built that team up into just this complete winning machine. And, you know, Hamilton didn't have to wait as many years as Schumacher did to get his first title with Mercedes. But the parallels between the two organisations are really stark. And in the way that Ferrari made Schumacher a record holder and everything Mercedes is doing for Lewis Hamilton. On to this race in particular, we had Bottas leading away from pole and Hamilton slipping back to third on the grid. But obviously, I think the key factor here is that Bottas picks up this debris on lap two, which is giving him issues and meaning the car has less downforce and it's just more difficult to drive. And I think from that point onwards, Lewis was going to find a way past him because, you know, Valtteri struggles to keep up with Hamilton in the races when he's got a fully functioning car. So I think once that situation became apparent, I think it was always going to be tough for Bottas to beat him.
I think Bottas more often than not brings it in qualifying, but then in the race, you know, Lewis just seems to dig a bit deeper. Maybe it's his more experience because he has more experience than Bottas. But whatever it is, you know, even at the start, Bottas got away, but you always had a feeling that something could happen with Bottas. When Lewis gets away, you think, well, no one's going to catch him. And lo and behold, that's what happened. And Bottas picked up the damage on lap two. What I found strange at that particular point of the race is on lap two, he picks up the damage, but he still was reeling off some fastest laps. And I think that confused me a bit. And I saw, and then when they brought him in quite early to defend the undercut by Red Bull and Max, and then allowed Lewis out for another 15 laps, I kind of thought of a bit of a conspiracy theory happening there. But honestly, if you look at the facts, after that damage and when Lewis put in the hot laps, plus helped by the VSC before his stop, I mean, it was just, it's almost like it's written up in the heavens that Lewis is going to win this, you know, and that's one of those races that sort of, no matter what you threw at Lewis, he was just going to win it.
Just the fact that throughout the entire race, Hamilton was just quicker. And, you know, whether or not, you know, the strategy was obviously the important part in him getting past Valtteri. But then obviously Max Verstappen got past Valtteri as well. So I don't think, you know, strategy or not, I don't think that Bottas was holding off Lewis. And he obviously wasn't holding off Max until he had the tyre issue either. In terms of the strategy, I know that, you know, some people think that Lewis kind of often gets the favourable one, but it just seems that he can kind of run at will as long as he wants on those tyres, and Bottas just has a much harder time managing them. It's exactly what we saw last week. It's what we saw in Nürburgring, that after a certain number of laps, Hamilton can just get so much better performance out of those tyres than Bottas can. And I think that's just the long and the short of it. I don't know if Bottas could have done another 15 laps on those tyres. Yeah, maybe he should have had that conversation with his engineer. Maybe Mercedes wouldn't have let him. But for me, I find that argument that Lewis is getting the favourable strategy a difficult one, because I don't think that Bottas could have done another 15 laps at that speed on those tyres. Unfortunately, I think that the situation with the debris did rob us of a more of a race, but it's an interesting one. And I think with the situation as debris as it was, I think that Lewis was always coming past Bottas, and, you know, the VSC made it easier, but I think that was an inevitability.
I think the important thing here to look at, let's look at Mercedes as a team, okay? Forget Lewis and Bottas. So here they are, they're starting from the front row at the end of the first lap, they're first and third. So they're sitting there doing the maths, and they'd realize, okay, to get 1-2, because that's what they want. They don't really care who wins 1-2. Ultimately, from the team perspective, they want a 1-2. And if you look at it, they were 1-3 after the first lap, and they were 1-2 at the end. So mission accomplished. Whether Lewis won or Valtteri won, from a Mercedes perspective, they got a 1-2 on the day that they hammered home their seventh world title. And it's appropriate. I think that's all that
also, I have to say. I think that's a good point. But also, Okay, so say Bottas says, I'm going to run long. Hamilton comes in, undercuts him, goes ahead. You know, there wasn't... I don't think that, you know, if they'd have left Bottas out and pitted Hamilton at that point, or, you know, they'd pitted Hamilton first, or Bottas had waited, I think that whatever happens, Hamilton's getting passed, and I think whatever happens, people are criticising Mercedes for giving Hamilton the superior strategy. I just think Hamilton's mastery of those tyres is just better, that he'll always make whatever strategy he's put on look like the better one. But I don't necessarily think that it is so much that it's more that he has the speed advantage, so he'll make whatever they give him work. And it kind of makes it look more like they're kind of working against Bottas.
Basically, Lewis is just a lot better than Valtteri, and it's simple as that.
That's how I see it, for sure.
Yeah, me too. I think everyone sees it. I mean, you know, even Valtteri has to see it. You know, you look at the score, who won more, and boom, it's there. And I think Valtteri knows, you know, and I think the key is when he does beat Lewis, he's got to know that Lewis is going to come back at him. And as he did yesterday, you know, Valtteri beat Lewis today. On Sunday, Lewis does the job.
Yeah, and you've got to give him respect. He's got a better qualifying differential to Lewis than Nico Rosberg or Jenson Button did, for sure. But those guys were much more able to do things in the race that allowed them to fight Hamilton in a more competitive manner than Bottas does. I think that, you know, maybe he has something with his setup where he's angling more towards qualifying than perhaps he needs to think about that. But I think it could just come back down to the fact that, you know, over a race distance, Hamilton is the quicker and more consistent driver, and he knows how to optimise those tyres. Let's move on to speak about Max Verstappen. I thought this was a really, really good drive from him, and really unfortunate that he ended up not being able to finish due to a tyre blowout. But I really just loved watching his aggression, the way he was following Bottas. You know, he didn't care that Bottas, you know, is in a Mercedes that has been, you know, seeing the back of all season. He was really going for it, and he forced Bottas into mistakes, and he got past him. So I thought really, really great drive from Max today.
Yeah, Max always delivers, you know. Thank God for Max, really. He just grows in stature. Of course, he makes his mistakes. That's the kind of driver he is, you know. He's an all-or-nothing guy, a bit like Senna in that way. So I think, you know, he delivered, and they're just not giving him the car. You know, all I can say is give Max the good car, guys, and he's going to make a plan, you know. But unfortunately, I don't know where they're lacking. You know, normally newy cars tend to come good at this time of the year. Towards the end, they start becoming really, really good. I don't see this one getting any better. And I really believe that at Imola, you know, the aero package and all that, because it's, you know, it's a track that needs aero, although it also doesn't need top speed. But there's some very tricky little bits. And I thought that the car would come good there, but obviously not. So I'm going to put my neck on the line there and think, this particular Newey model is not the greatest car he's produced.
It's now been 7 years in a row where Red Bull just haven't been able to compete with Mercedes. And obviously they do have the disadvantage of the engine situation, and maybe they're looking now to take that into their own hands. But yeah, I mean, Max is delivering the goods, and he needs the team to back him up on that. From the successes and continued impressive performances from Max Verstappen, we have the other Red Bull car of Alex Albon, and you know, his struggles are really continuing. Today he had the opportunity to capitalise on the fact that Max was out of the race, but he had a poor safety car restart, got passed by Charles Leclerc, and then spun while battling with Sergio Perez. Yeah, another really difficult weekend for Albon, who didn't have the pace in qualifying, seems to actually be falling into the clutches of those AlphaTauri drivers now, and I think this is it. I can't see how he stays at Red Bull beyond the season now. I think potentially even out of F1 for good.
No, I'm not so sure about that. I mean, you know, this Alex is obviously ticking some boxes, but this afternoon was just absolutely, it was horrible for him. I mean, honestly, there was a podium begging, at least fourth place, and all by himself he lost it. It was a frantic restart, but nothing silly went on. However, he lost it all by himself. Honestly, I don't know where Red Bull, what the end game is with the situation. All I can say is I'm just looking really forward to the excuses that are going to come out after this one, because, you know, I can't think of any, but they've been really creative, and they've defended a driver that They would have they never defended Pierre Gasly in this manner. They never defended Buemi or Hartley or any of those guys in this manner. They're defending young Alex beyond the call of duty, and I find that kind of strange. But yeah, as you said, if he's in Formula One next year, I'll be greatly surprised.
Yeah, because with Yuki Tsunoda looking like he's going to be partnering Pierre Gasly at AlphaTauri, unfortunately, and I think this is unfair, I think that Albon's had his career mismanaged, to be honest, you know, forcing him into a Red Bull before he was ready, before he had the rest necessary experience, and that looks like it's going to be his downfall, and I think that that's a real, real shame.
I agree, but it's a double-edged sword, you know, like if people had listened to the wise people at the time when they said Lewis wasn't ready for Formula One after he had been Formula Two champion and they'd kept him out a year, it would have been a mistake. So you know what it is there's drivers that do extremely, extremely well. And this is one thing we've got to accept in Formula One, in the junior series. And even drivers that don't do so well in junior series. I mean, Michael Schumacher wasn't this fantastic guy, you know, in the junior series. He was notable and he was strong and all that. But he seized the moment when he came into Formula One. When he came into Formula One, he had to deliver, and he delivered from the day he sat in the cockpit. And I think this is the difference between the greats and the journeymen, is that when they hit Formula One, they hit the ground running as if they've been there all the time.
Move on to the third man on the podium, and that was Daniel Ricciardo. Second podium of the season for him and Renault. Not necessarily his flashiest of drives. He obviously was slightly fortunate with Max having the incident, and then obviously Sergio Perez bizarrely deciding to pit out of third place when we had the safety car. Potentially Ricciardo got a bit lucky that the safety car was extended by Russell then putting it in the wall, because I think that Kvyat was definitely closing down on him with the fresher rubber. But yeah, another great drive from Ricciardo. He's probably one of my drivers of the season at this rate. He's just been so consistent, getting the most out of that Renault, in the points every week. Brilliant. He's really, really shown his best form this season.
Yeah, you know, my theory is that Daniel is like among the top three. I think he's right up there with Max and Lewis, maybe a notch down, or in the right car, he could even raise to their level. This is the guy who humbled Sebastian Vettel, if you remember correctly. Although one could say he kind of was humbled by Max Verstappen, but that's not such a bad thing. I mean, Max Verstappen's one of the best. So I think Daniel has grown at Renault because he's had to toil in a car that's not a race-winning natural car like Red Bull. It's like a B-team kind of thing. And he's delivering the results. And third place is, I think, a fantastic measure of what he's capable of, because you've also got to look at his teammate and just see that Esteban Ocon is just out at sea compared to the Australian.
I think in terms of pure qualifying speed, he's probably a step below the likes of Hamilton and Verstappen and even Bottas. But in terms of race pace, he's one of the best. He's not, you know, he's kind of built this reputation as the guy who's always wanting to go for the move and break late. But actually, his tire preservation has been one of the things I've been really impressed with, and something that I don't think he's previously been given credit for. You know, he can stay on pace on long stints. He can make different strategies work, either pitting late or going early and perfecting the undercuts. He makes moves at the right time. Yeah, just a really solid driver, and his racecraft is really impressive. Completely deserving of a second podium of the season as well. And Fernando Alonso must be licking his lips at the prospect of getting in that Renault next season, because from maybe looking like the sixth fastest car at the start of the season, Renault have probably the third best package. They have their own engine. I think Cyril's really pulled a rabbit out of the hat here, and they're looking really good. From Renault to the team that Ricciardo's going to be joining next season, another difficult race for McLaren. They seem to have lost some of their early season momentum and now look kind of behind both Racing Point and Renault in the battle for third place in the Constructors' Championship.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a fall for McLaren. I think there's a bit of a reality check. I think they already had the start of the season on a high, but they just haven't maintained that sustained, you know, effort. And if you look at it, the teams that have sustained the development sort of progress, it's the works teams, you know, Mercedes, apart from Ferrari, because they shot themselves in the foot, but even Renault to a certain degree, and Honda, Red Bull is a works team if you take Honda. So I think you got to take the other teams as the, let's call them the non works teams, the customer teams. And I think they're still top of the customer teams, but they're going to increasingly battle as a customer to take on the works teams, especially, as you say, Renault are really finding the sweet spot. So I think there's more pain in store for McLaren. But I think they've got a good chassis and their drivers keep on delivering the points. And let's be honest, to say McLaren have had a bad day and they've had two cars in the points is actually just shows you how they've progressed, because a year or so ago, they weren't getting cars near the points. So there's progress, but like anything, when you turn a ship, there's always, you know, some reefs you got to go a bit slower through. I'm convinced they'll get there. But this was, you know, one of those races where they probably hoped to be in podium contention, but to be honest, their drivers never had the kit to do that.
No, you make a good point, because McLaren have improved hugely from, you know, look back to those Honda days with Fernando Alonso and Jenson Button rolling around at the back. And yeah, they've made a huge improvement and the team have done really well. I think it's just, as you say, probably they're not improving as quickly as Renault are and as Racing Point are, and that's the problem. In terms of Racing Point, obviously very disappointing situation pitting Sergio Perez out of a podium spot, but he looks like he's found his best form, and I think that Red Bull seat is now looking increasingly likely for him. But a shocking weekend for Lance Stroll, whose early season form seems to have completely gone out the window now. He seems to really be struggling.
Yeah, well, look, I think the Sergio story, first of all, he's, you know, driving for his career. He's got very little options really on the table. There's Haas, as you say. You mentioned Red Bull. I think that's a long shot. I don't see Red Bull taking him. Unless, of course, you do some research and we see how many Red Bulls they're selling in Mexico, because I think that might have a factor to it. But end of the day, I'm not so sure he's going to go to Red Bull. But that's an interesting prospect. However, I see him more ending up at Haas or out of the sport, unfortunately. But that would be a travesty, because on afternoons like this, Sergio is always there. He always delivers in the races of high attrition. He's got incredible experience. So it would be, like I said, a travesty to not having him in the sport next year. And afternoons like this prove how good he really is. And yeah, it's a bit of a wake-up call for the team, because I think a podium went begging.
No, it's been an interesting one. And they're an organisation that previously were renowned for making the right calls and maximising on strategy. And, you know, being the kind of best pound-for-pound team in Formula One. Whereas now they look like this team with a car that's quick, but they don't kind of fully understand it. They're also making strategy errors.
Yeah, and also let's also be honest, they have this whole COVID thing that they've been through with all the lies and the cover-ups and the bullshit, really. I mean, you know, that whole thing can't have played well in their hand, and it takes a guy like Sergio, who's got so much experience, who can get in the car, switch off everything and drive. You can just see Lance, he's just been totally out of sorts. Lance is better than what we've seen him in the last couple of races. He's totally out of sorts. He ran over his mechanic. He didn't think to say, hey, is the mechanic okay? He just thought to make an excuse. The guy's just absolutely out at sea also. You know, he's just nowhere. And I actually prompted me to think, you know, Aston Martin are going to get two of the worst drivers on the grid on current form when they line up next year on the grid, because Seb had another disaster. He punted Magnussen off, and then Stroll, what was he doing? You know, so yeah, I agree with you, but I think we've also got to look at the situation that the pink team are in, and they did themselves no favour with how they covered this whole COVID thing.
But you mentioned Ferrari. I do think that they're a team on the up, actually. I think that they've definitely clearly made some improvements in these latest updates, and they're now a genuine contender for decent midfield points. Charles Leclerc is just driving brilliantly as well. And, you know, this is now a few races in a row where he's had genuine pace, kind of battling for that final podium spot, fourth or fifth. So, yeah, I think Ferrari are definitely a team on the rise, and I expect them to be back towards the front next season. Perhaps not challenging for wins, but getting a few more podiums.
Okay, I'm gonna agree on one and have to disagree on the other. One, Charles Leclerc's driving the pants off that car. I mean, what he's doing with that car, I think, will make us shudder in terms of what its capability is. Ferrari on the up, I disagree. I felt that they should have been a lot better at Imola than they were. I think they just totally at a dead end with their engine. Whatever happened with the engine, the secret deal is still a very big... I can't believe their car is that bad.
You're completely right in the sense Ferrari still have plenty of work to do. You know, I'm talking about them kind of getting up towards the front of the midfield. And for the amount of money and the amount of history that team has in Formula One, that's still not good enough. So don't for one second think that I'm saying that Ferrari don't need to improve, because they 100% do. But just before we finish, I think we'll just wrap up with some of the kind of teams towards the back. Another great weekend for AlphaTauri. Daniel Kvyat in fourth position. And Pierre Gasly very unfortunate to have to retire on the opening laps due to an issue. He was running in fifth and obviously qualified brilliantly in fourth at the time. So that looks like a team that's on the up for sure.
Yeah, I think that's the key, is that normally this time of the year, Red Bull are far more ahead of what used to be Toro Rosso. But AlphaTauri are there. They, you know, Alex Albon can't get past them. So they've got a really nice little package there, which makes me back to the point that I was making. I think Newey got the maths wrong here, and the car's level is actually Albon level. And the difference that that car has is the Max Verstappen factor.
And were there any other drivers that impressed you today? Kind of in the lower points. Obviously, we saw Russell in 10th on for his first points finish in Formula 1, only to drop it under a safety car. It's a pretty big error for him. But otherwise, you know, his driving was good. But you know, he can't afford mistakes like that, because that Williams isn't in the position to score points too often.
Well, I agreed with the last factor. I mean, you know, the points came begging, and he was in them, and he was good. I think he got a bit excited. That's the biggest mistake I've seen Russell make in 2 years. You know, yes, he makes these small mistakes every now and then, like any other driver. But this one will haunt him for the rest of his career. There's no doubt about it. Pretty much like Senna, you know, when Senna binned it at Monaco. Okay, he was leading, but he binned it also. You know, you make these mistakes. Even the greats make mistakes. And I think it's a law of averages. If in a career you're going to make like five mistakes that are actually going to, no one's ever going to forget, then so be it. And this would be one of his mistakes. But the guy's on just another level. I'd love to see him in the Mercedes, for instance. But let's not hold that moment against him. And my heart broke when I saw him against the barrier there. He was obviously in tears and emotional about what he did. He knew he had made a mistake. But that's a sign of greatness. You know, that's a sign of, you know, Mika Hakkinen did a similar thing too. Each of these guys are mere humans, and they're allowed to make these kind of mistakes. That, you know, 100 million people watch it on TV, well, so be it.
No, I agree completely. And you can't be too harsh on him. You know, he's having to drive the wheels off that car to get it anywhere near the points. He's having to qualify well. He's then having to, you know, fight on track with faster cars. And, you know, as a result, he's always on the edge. And it's just frustrating, because I think everyone wants to see him in the points, because everyone knows what a good driver he is. But nonetheless, Williams have made progress, and they continue to do so. So that's definitely promising. That is just about all we've got time for today, though. We head to Turkey for the next race in 2 weeks' time, where Lewis Hamilton can clinch his record-equalling 7th Formula One World Championship. Meanwhile, what has been an incredibly tense and entertaining midfield battle will continue. Thanks very much for listening to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast. We'll be back next week to discuss some of the other storylines from this race and the wider world of Formula One. But if you do want to get in touch with the show, please drop us an email at podcast@grandprix247.com. You can get in touch with us on our website, grandprix247.com, and you can also follow us on social media at Grand Prix 24/7. Thanks very much, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.